Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend show. This weekend show, first half of the show, we're going to focus on the bit of a rebound in the precious metals, even copper, a lot of metals actually. It's a rebound kind of across the board, but we're going to spend a bit more time on what that means for precious metals and the underlying equities. Back half of the show is for all the traders out there. We're going to have a technical trader back on, as we like to do, to talk about the wide range of markets and I guess a lot of green on the screen, so where those opportunities lie. Just as a reminder, check out our website, kereport.com, or on your podcast player and on YouTube, just search The KE Report. That's where you can get all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week. Without further ado, let's get into this weekend show. We are chatting with Brian London. Brian is the editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host at the New Orleans Investment Conference this year, happening right before and into Halloween. I'll post a link in the show notes so all of you can consider going to that conference. We go every year, and it's a great time to be in New Orleans and a great time to get in front of companies. Brian, let's talk about this rebound in precious metals as we're recording this kind of halfway through the day on Thursday, because Chad and I will be at the Metals Investor Forum on Friday and Saturday. We have gold that has rebounded to about $4,700. Silver is back up to $80. Copper is up to almost $620. Look, it's been a nice rebound just in the last couple days, and the stocks have done even better. GDX on Wednesday was up something like 7 or 8%. Brian, what's drawing this rebound? We're hearing a lot of, I guess, rumors that this Iranian war is coming to an end, but what do you see as being the main driver here?
Yeah, well, that's it. And I apologize for the way my voice sounds, getting over a cold right now. But yeah, I have been saying for some time that once we get a resolution in the Iran conflict, then everything's going to get right back in gear, because the effect of the Iran conflict, the higher oil prices, the inflationary repercussions of that, and all of the implications of the above on Fed monetary policy and central bank monetary policy in general is what has constrained all of the risk assets out there. All of the correlations other than energy and interest rates have gone toward one. The gold, silver, mining stocks are positively correlated with the broader stock market. They are inversely correlated. All of the above are inversely correlated with oil prices, particularly Brent. And that's all kind of resolving right now. So if this is indeed what we're seeing right now is the resolution, or on the path toward a resolution, we're in the starting gate. We've just exited the starting gate in the metals and the miners across the board. And, you know, the opportunity is still there because the juniors in particular are responding, but they're down, you know, typically 30% from their recent peaks or more. And this is just a great opportunity to get involved, whether this is the actual resolution or not, because I believe that resolution is coming at some point.
Yeah, Brian, it's hard to even know if this is the resolution or not. When you follow the news, it's hard to even know what news to follow. But what we can say is that there does seem to be some legs to this bounce, at least the last couple of days. But to the point you just made, it's coming off a very low level. So just what a wild year we've had. The January push to epic highs in gold, silver, copper, then the crash, then another rebound in February, then a very rough month of March where there was a couple of weeks there that were just brutal, kind of a clawing sideways and consolidating April. But if this is the beginning of the next leg higher, are you taking any action in your portfolio to start acquiring companies while their valuations are a lot lower than they were earlier in the year? Are you taking advantage of this dip to buy it?
Yeah, I absolutely am. I am just about fully invested, so there's not a lot more I can do. I've been guzzling my own Kool-Aid, as it were. So yeah, I'm trying to buy the best names in our portfolio right now and get more of what I already own at this point.
Brian, since we have seen pretty much all these stocks drop off, some are down 60, 70%, some are only down 30%. Do you think that's the market telling us already what the higher quality names are? And if that is, should we stick to the higher quality names or should we play the lower quality names because they've dropped so much, so maybe they have more ability to rebound quicker?
Well, I think that's a great point. I think you don't argue with the market. It usually knows what's going on. And that's a good point, but I think you still need to look at each story individually because at bottom, this is a very inefficient market. And sometimes you know more than what the broad market realizes at any point in time. So do your research, look at each individual name, but also don't discount, where the market is going. If the higher quality names are higher quality for a reason. Generally speaking, there are exceptions and you can make a lot of money in those exceptions, but you have to do your legwork.
Well, Brian, just to that point, when we look at what happened in March and even part of April, it reminded me of the bear market playbook where we had talked with you so many times and you said some companies are afraid to put their head up out of the foxhole because they're going to get it shot off. And that's what was happening in March and April. So some of the quality companies actually did good work, put out good news, and it became a liquidity event. Some of the stocks that dropped the most are the producers that are actually making money or some of the best developers. They got chopped by 50, 60% with good news. So it's hard. And some of the companies that didn't have any news were the ones that dropped 30% because they didn't say anything. So could that be a factor too, where some of that downturn, it just became a selling frenzy?
Yeah, it's always a case because we've got, Western traders involved in the market now, and that brings that volatility, that brings leveraged positions on margins. So the sell-offs get steeper, the rallies get steeper. So that's part and parcel of what we're going to have now. And taking advantage of these sell-offs in a bull market. The old adage, buy the dips in a bull market really applies. And you get be careful what you ask for. We love this Western money finally coming in and speculating and driving prices up. But there's the other side of the coin. Those tend to create opportunities if you believe in the bull market, the longer term thesis. And you're right too, a lot of the producers, the numbers they're putting out are absolutely stunning. And there's more to come. So I think some of those producers out there are, they offer, junior exploration play potential.
Well, Brian, I know that you like to focus more on the smaller companies, the juniors, the drill plays. They're all cashed up right now. And one thing we have heard recently sometimes, and I hate hearing this, and I don't think it's a great marketing piece, but some of these companies are saying, look at our last financing. Our share price is lower. Great opportunity for people to get in. How do you evaluate something like that when companies make those comments as a selling feature? The fact of the matter is they're cashed up, but still, is that encouraging to you at all when people say our stock price is lower from the last financing? Great time for you to get in.
Well, it depends on who did the financing, doesn't it? If it's longer term smart players who have a great track record, then those were smart investors and they were willing to buy it at a higher price. So I think at that point, the comparison is valid. But there are a number of players out there who simply get in financings and clip the warrants. They're the first to sell when the stock comes free trading. If those are the outfits that are involved in a financing, that I think you need to avoid those plays at any price because they don't have the strong long-term hands involved.
Well, Brian, since we are in drill season, well, the drill season's different in different parts of the world, but we're in the full-on drill season right now where even Canada and the US, the parts that are frozen are thawing out and companies have the budget to deploy. There's a couple flavors here. There's the pre-discovery stories, and then there's the people that have made discoveries that are pressing their bets. Any companies in either bucket that you want to highlight?
Yeah, if I look through my portfolio, there are a few names that I think I don't own enough of or even own yet. And we have some recent recommendations in Gold Newsletter that I'll leave for our subscribers at this point in time still. But there are some out there that I really like, and I'm looking through it right now. Miata Metals is one I think is undervalued by the market. I think they've got a great exploration playing and keep proving the thesis that there's a lot more gold, a lot more prospects to be found. I recently visited the Prince Silver Project in Nevada. It has a lot of potential, much larger potential than I had originally envisioned. So I really like that one, and they're aggressively drilling right now as well. I like Spartan Metals, another one that I own. It's had a bit of a run, but it's a tungsten play in Nevada and Arizona now, actually. And it's getting a resource estimate and a PEA out pretty soon that I think will be market moving. Sun Peak Metals is now the play in the Arabian Shield in Saudi. And they are progressing extremely quickly and are about to, or I think they've actually just started drilling on their first prospect much more quickly than I think the market appreciated. And therefore, I think we're going to have results much more quickly. And they're very excited about what they have there.
Brian, we were also having a conversation about resources. Some companies that are resisting issuing a resource, and also just the number of resources that companies have out there. It was only a couple of years ago we were talking about ounces in the ground, some of which being valued at $5 or $10 an ounce. That has come up. One could say it's still undervalued, but it's definitely higher than it was a few years ago. What sort of analysis do you do on resources now where, we've said it many times, a million ounces isn't a million ounces that it was 10 years ago. Everyone has at least a million, if not a couple million ounces. So what moves the needle for you in terms of resources?
Yeah, I think it's multi-million ounce at this point. But, you know, the market's involved. And when I started out, a million ounce resource was really big. And it was enough to get the majors' attention. Now the majors are looking at 5 million ounces. You know, a half a million ounces a year for 10 years is kind of their minimum for a big project, something that shows that kind of potential. But in this particular bull market, we've evolved to the point where companies can actually bring smaller projects to development, through development themselves. The money is there. If your CapEx is $100, $200 million, you can get that kind of money for a project in the market now and develop it yourself. So it's no longer a bluff, a negotiating ploy. You can always be the last buyer, the bidder of last resort for your own project, and just develop it yourself. By the same token, there are mid-tier companies that want to become majors. And I think we're going to see that evolve over time, because now we have fewer majors than we had in the last cycles. But we have a lot of mid-tiers that are aggressive and more aggressively growing than the majors. And they can take on those projects that are 2-3 million ounces in size. So the market evolves. It's a different market this time. It's always a little bit of difference in each cycle. And I think this one is really conducive even for projects as small as, you know, 2 or 3 million ounces.
Well, Brian, to the point you just made, we've seen a lot of companies get rewarded that have gone from a junior developer into a producer, or bought a producing asset, or bought a higher cost, what people would call an old tired mine, but have shown they can make quite a bit of hay while the sun is shining here in the metals prices. Do you like that approach? Because we hear from certain pundits that you only want to be in the biggest and best and tier one and large mines. But to the point you just made, at these metals prices, even small production can be very rewarding. And the market has been rewarding those companies. So just curious to get your thoughts on that segment.
Yeah, I think the market is correct. This is different. For decades, you know, the old saying was, you know, you're either an explorer or a developer slash producer. And explorers should not produce, should not become miners. At these prices, there's enough margin you can afford to have a few mistakes. In projects that are smaller, that have permits and in shorter timelines to production, can be rehabilitated. And before you know it, these junior mining companies can be churning out $30, $40, $50 million in free cash flow a year. The market's respecting that, and I think it should. It is a different market now than anything we've ever seen before.
And that's why we have so many companies talking about getting into production, somehow figuring out a way to monetize the minerals, the ounces in the ground that they have, sometimes even before they've announced ounces in the ground. But Brian, I always hesitate sometimes when I hear this from companies that don't have a resource or don't even have economics. And I always ask time frame because everyone says they can get into production now or soon, but sometimes when you push them on it, it's 3, 4 years out. That to me is too long. What sort of questions do you ask those companies that say, we're moving into production, we're going to be cash flowing? What matters to you?
Yeah, time frame. Anything more than, say, 18 months, I think it's tomorrow's story. It's not today's story. And it's not going to get priced by the market accurately or appropriately. So, yeah, I think you need something that is 18 months or less. Before you know it, it's going to be 2028. And I don't think, knock on wood, I don't think we're going to have $2,000 gold in 2028. Even if we only have $4,000 gold, you're talking about companies that can churn out tremendous free cash flow at these kinds of prices on even smaller scale projects. But yeah, I think if you get too far out, you're right, the market gets skeptical, and I think we should be as well.
Brian, we've also seen some pretty big M&A deals announced just in the last month or two. Two that are notable, G2 Goldfields was taken over by G Mining. It made sense. G Mining was already there. They had taken over Oko, and now there's Oko West, so they're putting those two projects together. The reason I'm asking about these is that their ounce in the ground valuation was around $600 an ounce for gold. And then we saw Rupert Resources taken over by Agnico Eagle for close to $680 an ounce in the ground. Now, we've seen some takeovers or take unders in the past for $50 to $100 an ounce in the ground. Now we've seen a couple above 600, almost pushing 700 in one case. Do you think that leaves some room for the developers in the middle that may start getting valued at 200, 300, $400 an ounce in the ground, or is that being too optimistic?
No, I think that's exactly right. I have been very conservative. I've talked about these big resource plays that not that long ago were trading it for, $15 an ounce in the ground. And in saying, well, if they sell for $150 an ounce in the ground, we're talking about a 10x on market value at least. But in reality, in the back of my mind, I was always thinking $300 or more. And I think that's where the market will settle out. I think you have to use the lower numbers to be conservative, but be cognizant of the upside potential. And I think it's going to get there. The earnings that are being released by the producers, the kinds of margins that are out there, I think we're in a sweet spot over the next 2 or 3 years where we're going to have a revaluation of ounces in the ground. And it's going to get ahead of itself at some point, but it is so far from that point now that I think there's just worlds of opportunity out there.
Brian, one more quick one just on jurisdiction then. When it comes to ounces in the ground, some ounces, some jurisdictions always get valued higher and are more respected. But there are opportunities in some of these lesser known areas or the, I guess, sketchier areas. What do you like right now in terms of general area plays?
Well, you start off at the top of Nevada. You go through the various U.S. jurisdictions and Canadian jurisdictions. I think you can look at the premium or the discounts that the market places in current jurisdictions, and that's a pretty good gauge. That is a cumulative knowledge and valuations and analyses of thousands, if not millions, of players in the market valuing or relatively valuing these jurisdictions. And so you can buy a company with a project that is getting a discount relative to a, say, Nevada play. But that just means that play has to be that much better than the Nevada play, all everything else being equal. I think you should not have a problem having a few plays in, further flung jurisdictions in your portfolio, but I would not put all my eggs in one basket either. A prime example of that right now is Aris Minerals, a company I own and don't own enough of that's operating in Kazakhstan. I think the market is applying too great of a discount for Kazakhstan, and I think that's going to be realized over the months to come with Aris. So again, the market is a guide, but the market is inefficient and gets it wrong sometimes.
It can, and that is opportunistic for investors. But right now, I think really the biggest question is, Is the bottom in for this correction? Is it kind of the green light to move more aggressively into these stocks? Is the worst behind us? We're seeing a rebound across the board. Copper's done well, but so have the U.S. market. So it's kind of a party on Wall Street, on Main Street right now. We'll see how long this lasts. But hey, as of right now, potentially a pretty significant turn that happened this week, in the back part of this week. Brian, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for toughing out that cold that you have. I hope you start feeling better in the coming weeks. We will chat with you in a couple weeks. But hey, in the meantime, always great chatting with you. And again, you want to check out Brian's newsletter, the Gold Newsletter, or the New Orleans Investment Conference, click the link in the show notes. Brian, thanks for your time, everyone. Stick around. We're going to be right back, switching our focus to a bit more of the trading aspect in these markets.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.